My guest, Chris Thiele, is an adventurous musician, a mandolinist who likes to explore the boundaries of his instrument, much like his older colleagues, Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer. A founding member of Nickel Creek and the Punch Brothers, he's also been a good friend to public radio. Chris Thiele was recently named the new host of A Prairie Home Companion. I'm so glad to be speaking with you, Chris, in anticipation of your concert here in Kalamazoo.
Wonderful to be on the air. Kalamazoo, Michigan. I haven't been to Kalamazoo for so long. I'm looking forward to getting back.
Do you have any particular memories of being in Kalamazoo?
Oh, let me tell you about my memories of Kalamazoo. So, you guys do beer very well up there. And I went to a brewery. Now, the name of it escapes me, but this fellow had this beautiful brewery. They were closed for the night. He actually opened it up after a Nickel Creek show, and we all traipsed over there with our instruments. And we started playing, and he started pouring us beers. And at a certain point, he actually jumped up onto his own bar and said, "You'll never hear this here again, but all the beers are free." And it was a pretty magical evening. I also think, isn't Bell's Brewery close to you guys?
Well, it's across the tracks from, it's across the street from the bar I think you were at, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Wait, what was that bar called? Do you remember?
You must have been at Craft Brow with Steve Berthel as brewer there.
Yes, it was Craft Brow. That's it.
That's
Craft
awesome.
Brow. But yes, so I have very fond memories of Kalamazoo, and it's going to be a homecoming for my actual mandolin. Was built in Kalamazoo, Michigan, in the early 20s at the Gibson factory.
Oh, I meant to ask you that. That's fantastic to hear that you got a primo Gibson instrument from Kalamazoo. So first off, what can you tell me, if anything, about taking over the reins of A Prairie Home Companion?
Well, I can say that I am extraordinarily excited about it. I adore the show and grew up listening to it every Saturday. My family and I would gather around the radio and listen to back then. Certainly, there were still Powder Milk Biscuits, but there were also I don't know if you remember Rob Bits, that was accompanied by the snapping guitar sound, and it sounded, I guess it was a cereal that made grape nuts basically taste like Frosted Flakes in comparison. It sounded very hearty. I listened to, actually, some of my earliest memories hearing the mandolin were of tuning into Prairie Home Companion, hearing people like Jethro Burns and then regulars like Peter Ostrushko. And just Garrison's voice, his ability to spin worlds that are easily inhabitable by anyone who hears his voice, and his ability to both transport you, but also help you root yourself, help you underline moments in your own life, by talking about, a tomato, by talking about some fresh tomato, and all of a sudden you're recalling all the great tomatoes you've ever had in your life, and realizing that even if the meaning of life is elusive, a great tomato is actually part of it. That's part of the meaning of life, and little moments like that are so important, and they themselves can be transportive. So as I cautiously take the reins of this amazing body of work that Garrison has given to us all, I look to try and carry that tradition of marking the wonderful moments in life, but also hopefully providing a break in the middle of one's month, those Saturdays, 2 hours every Saturday where you can just take a break, think about some other things for a while.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, and for someone like yourself who's interested in a lot of different things, it could I could go into a lot of different directions, and I really look forward. We all do. We really look forward to seeing how the show changes and progresses over the next few seasons. So good luck.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, let's focus in on your program for Friday, October 30th in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. You'll be walking out onto that beautiful stage by yourself. Do you feel all alone when you do these solo shows?
There's on one hand, you know, yeah, it can look lonely on the, you know, certainly when I go and see a solo show, sometimes you're impressed by just one little human being attempting to fill up that big concert hall. But of course, so from my perspective, when I step out on stage, I look out and see a bunch of people there. And ultimately, when you play music, if there's anyone else there, regardless of whether they have an instrument or not, you're playing music with them, not just for them. You're playing music with them, and I think it's as a solo performer, it's important to remember that it's as insular an experience as you make it. And I'm actually looking forward to upping the ante as far as including the people who attend the shows this time around. When I did my last round of solo performing, the program was pretty fixed. I think often I didn't change it at all from night to night. And this time I'm looking forward to actually getting in there and trying to let the kind of day that I've had, the place that I'm in, and the people who come and what they feel like to play music, you know, for and with. I might try and call some Peyton Manning style audibles at the line of scrimmage. where maybe I was going to play such and such a piece of music, I might just do something completely different. There'll certainly be some Bach. I'm working on the last three of the six sonatas and partitas for solo violin, and so I'll look to try some of that out on you guys. And then I'm working on some new music of my own, and I may workshop a little bit of that. See how it's coming across, and but not actually turn any of you into guinea pigs. I want to make sure that whatever I do, it's worth your time. There's a crackling intensity to the first couple performances of any bit of music, so hopefully I can draw on that too.
Just to orient some listeners who may have been attending Fontana concerts for a long time, this sounds similar to what Mr. Edgar Meyer did a couple years ago when he brought Bach as well as some of his own compositions and made it a dialogue, you know, between himself and the audience. He stayed really loose and friendly the whole time. It wasn't like formal tuxedo and tails and,
I love it. Yeah. Edgar's a big hero of mine. And I've worked with him extensively over the years and actually sort of apprenticed myself to him as a young man. And I don't necessarily feel like that apprenticeship has ended yet. I love the idea that when you come to a show, you're not necessarily just being presented with a finished product. I think that's more like a record. You know, when you get an actual record, and the thing doesn't change because of you experiencing it. Whereas a live show, it changes because you're there. You are necessarily changing the experience just by being there. And I think quite literally, the acoustics will be different. Obviously just slightly, but they will actually be different because you're in the room. But then on a more more figurative level, the people that come, I feel like, should have a big say in how the evening goes, and that's the beauty of live music. I really look forward to that. I look forward to seeing who's there, and trying to play music for them. I'll have a little bit of an agenda. I'm also working on the back half of the the six sonatas and partitas for solo violin only on mandolin. I recorded the first three, and I'll do a little bit off of that record, but also I'm working on the last three pieces here, and I'll be trying to get some performance time on them. I went to the studio for the last round of these pieces, having not performed them at all, just basically done that thing I'm talking about where I performed them for myself, and then learned so much about them touring after the record came out that this time, before I go to the studio, I want to actually have toured them a little bit. So I think maybe I'll be playing the D minor partita, which has the famous Chaconne.
Chaconne, yes.
Which I hope people find interesting on the mandolin. I think it actually works fairly well.
Chris, your mandolin has no sustain. Like, how do you get that to work?
Oh, it has sustain. It has sustain. It's just not it's not the sort of extroverted romantic sustain of the violin or the voice. But in the same way, the piano certainly has sustain. It's sustain that decays. So does mandolin have sustain that decays. What's very interesting with the Bach is how often polyphony is the star rather than lyricism. So while, of course, for movements in the D minor partita, for instance, like the opening, the Allemande, of course you can really milk a line like that on a bowed instrument. Whereas on the mandolin, where the sustain is decaying rapidly, you want to actually draw people in. You want to be, sort of deliver a confidential performance of it. Something that welcomes intimacy and draws people closer and closer to the instrument, so that they actually become attuned to the intricacies of the instrument. Probably half of the writing is extremely polyphonic, and the mandolin actually lent itself quite readily to polyphony, whereas the violin, one really has to do some left hand and right hand acrobatics to realize the polyphony. And so on the mandolin, that music just falls under the fingers. It's the mandolin just rises up singing. So I'd say you'd be surprised that the music actually, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's half and half as far as things that lend themselves more readily to the lyrical voice of the violin versus the more harmonic voice of the mandolin.
One of the tracks from your duet album with Edgar Meyer, Bass and Mandolin, that's my absolute favorite, is called The Old Beagle. Would you tell me about that tune?
Yes, the Old Beagle. That started as, actually, that song started from scratch. Neither of us had anything. Often, Edgar or I will bring a nugget of something into the writing room, and then we'll kind of fashion it into something together. That one was absolutely, it was nothing, and we sat there and talked about what we might like to hear and started making noises together, and they turned into that piece. Just that little, that singing melody, he launched into that, and I launched into that little shimmery accompanimental figure. And then they started informing each other, and it went from there. That was a really fun process, and probably unique on the record as a result.
Finally, Chris, I'm going to twist your arm and ask you to give a reason why it might be important for folks to send a little money to their public radio station during the pledge drive.
Oh, I mean, my whole life, I feel like, is built on. I was raised by a public radio family. NPR was always on. And the importance of the programming one can find on public radio, I mean, I can't emphasize it enough. I feel like, you know, things like A Prairie Home Companion, This American Life, then, and the local programming that we, you know, when our actual communities get to get in there and, in essence, tell each other what we're into, you know, as opposed to gigantic corporations that have focus grouped a playlist that repeats ad nauseum, where money is the sole goal. We have to rail against that with everything we have, protect our ability to share the things that we love with other people. I feel like public radio is one of the, you know, one of the few strongholds of that kind of activity. It behooves us to take good care of it.
Thank you so much, Chris, and we really look forward to seeing you in Kalamazoo.
I look forward to being there. We'll see you soon.